The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Oh, 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 oh. It is time for Dark Side of the Pooch. Dr. Ram, what you got? Oh, I got a little kitty cat here, man. This is Dark Side of the Pooch. You can hear every Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Central Time, no matter where you're listening, here in the Birmingham area, Alabama, the entire state, the entire country, or the entire world. You can hear this show, and it's growing leaps and bounds every single week. We greatly appreciate you. And, of course, if you go to a Tony Curry Radio podcast, you can listen to the show anytime you want to. There's tens of 20s and 30, 50 different episodes you can listen to. Dark Side of the Pooch. Just search Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K. And we're in every industry where podcasts are up. So we're looking forward to another fantastic show. Lots of great emails. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. And, of course, it's brought to you by Ed's Pet World. In business for nearly 50 years, Seth, Angie, the entire crew down there are fantastic. Exotic pets, caiman alligators, ferrets. They got cockatoos down there. They got water turtles. They got shrimp. They got any type of animal you want. Great fish, too. And, of course, Seth also travels the United States looking for that hard-to-find toy still in the box. He's got Battlestar Galactica stuff, Star Wars stuff still in the box. He loves his toy closet. Check it out. Buy, sell, and trade at Ed's Pet World. First of all, we're going to get into some dogs on drugs. We have a tick paralysis issue going on right now, and something that dogs absolutely love to eat in fall, but is it okay for them to eat it? We'll talk about that coming up in a few minutes. But first of all, Dr. Rab Stewart at the Rossbridge Animal Hospital, 208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, as well as the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. What's going on there, Doc? Anything exciting happening there at Rossbridge?
Dude, what an introduction.
You like that? Are we over? Are we done yet?
Yeah. Okay. Good talking to you. So you always ask me questions.
Yes.
To get the show started, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
If I say Chris Franz, do you know who that is?
Chris Franz?
Yeah.
I do not.
Okay. I'll give you another.
Okay.
Tina Weymouth.
Tina Weymouth. No, I'm drawing a blank here. You've got me so far.
Okay. Now you'll get it. David Byrne.
Talking Heads.
So yes. This weekend I started reading Chris Franz is the drummer.
Yes. Oh yeah. That's
Talking
right.
Heads.
Yeah.
And his wife was the bassist.
Yes.
Tina Weymouth.
Yes.
And he wrote a book and I started reading it this weekend and it's really good.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good. So of course it's about Talking Heads. But, you know, he doles out some David Byrne dirt.
Really?
And, yeah, I mean, it's a good read. So, you know,
David Byrne is a genius.
He really is.
I mean, when you saw Once in a Lifetime and, you know, all those weird and Burning Down the House, obviously was their big hit. But I mean, you go back to their early stuff, man, it was weird, but he's a brilliant man. Great businessman too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think didn't he have a Broadway show or something like that, or he's doing some type of, I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. He had a Broadway show where he was playing the hits, but his band that was with him, it was like almost all percussion. And then he had some dancers and I think it had like a guitar and a bass, but it was just, you know, like everything he does, it's almost like avant-garde, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it gets into their early days because they all went to the Rhode Island School of Design and they're all just, all of them. Well, except for Jerry Harrison, they're all just artists, you know, like visual artists. But then they said, let's form a band. So it's been a cool book.
You get a chance. I'll pick that book up. There are two other books I want to throw at you. One is called Confessed. It is the Rob Halford autobiographical read. Obviously, Rob, the lead singer of Judas Priest, he wrote it about a year ago. I'm about halfway through it. It's written by him, but it seems like a biography because there are so much great content stories in there that you would think that someone else would have to write it about Rob Halford because you cannot believe that he's divulging all this information. It's great. And there's a brand new book that came out yesterday called The Lives of Brian, which is about Brian Johnson from AC/DC, which is a really good read.
Cool.
So check it out. All right. We got some great email questions. I want to get into a couple stories though. I saw that it's pretty amazing stuff. One is tick paralysis. This woman who's got a beloved Maltese, it just had a litter of five pups. And she was due, the Maltese was, to have her tick and heartworm medicine. And she did not give it to her Maltese while she was feeding and obviously nurturing and nursing her pups, because she thought, I'll just wait until she's done nursing and then I'll go ahead and give her a tick medicine. Well, the dog goes outside, gets a tick, and this dog actually has paralysis, tick paralysis. And the dog now is paralyzed from pretty much the neck down. Can you tell me what this is? Is it a rare thing? Is it okay for your dogs to have vaccinations and or flea and tick stuff given to them when they're nursing?
Tick paralysis is not super common. Obviously it's passed through, tick bites, and, you know, sometimes depending on how early it can be caught, when you remove the tick, it can, you know, it goes away.
The paralysis does.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The paralysis can, yeah, it can go away. And it's something that anytime we have a neurologic dog come in, you know, that's walking strangely, we'll typically, you know, do a real thorough exam and be sure it doesn't have any ticks on it. And we'll also ask the owner, you know, have you pulled any ticks off recently? So it's not something super common, but you know, it is on the list of differentials when you have a dog that has some of those symptoms. We generally recommend that for pregnant dogs, you really watch what vaccines you give, and you watch what medication that you give, and you know, once the puppies are born. It's, you can kind of be a little more lax with, you know, vaccinations and medications, but you still have to be careful with it because things can be passed through the milk. And I know we're not talking about farm animals here, but in cows, you know, we don't really think a lot about cows except for when we eat them, but cows are really limited as to what you can give them because so many things are excreted in their milk and it stays in their muscles too.
Yeah.
And we eat that stuff. So, when you do have a pregnant animal or a nursing animal, it can limit what you're able to do for them, for the health of the babies.
In this particular case though, is a tick remedy okay for a dog that's nursing?
I mean, yeah, I would always recommend that they continue their preventatives when they're nursing.
All right.
I've never had anything, you know, happen that would be a big deal with, you know, giving the preventions while they're, nursing. I mean, one of the preventions that we use for heartworms and intestinal parasites, it has ivermectin in it, and you deworm young puppies with ivermectin.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not something that you know, you'd have an issue with. But there's also topical, preventatives, you know, that don't have to be absorbed. I guess technically they are absorbed systemically with the oil glands, but you know, so that would maybe, if someone's concerned, that would be a better option, you know, a topical treatment for fleas and ticks rather than oral.
All right. He's Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital. This is Dark Side of the Pooch. You can hear it every Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Central Time, and wherever you get your podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast. It's Curry with a K. This, you know, every time I pull up news on animals, I see one of these stories, and I know it doesn't, well, it does directly affect us here. We just don't see it a whole lot here. But two more dogs in San Jose were sickened after apparently ingesting meth over the weekend. They found on walks in San Jose. Historically, we see a handful of cases. One of the vets said, now our doctors are seeing up to 87 pets this year who have been affected by some type of meth ingestion. Come home, the dog does, eats his dinner. About 30 minutes later, he begins to pace around the apartment. They say, if you're concerned, if your dog starts showing aggression, twitching, hyperexcitability, bring them in for an emergency clinic right away. Evidently, people are walking through parks where a lot of other people are in parks, and dogs are very inquisitive and they want to eat different things. And I certainly understand that. Have you ever had any dogs? And I know we don't have any marijuana issues here because it's not legal here yet. It will be eventually. But are there some things from a drug standpoint that dogs, obviously they should not ingest those things. But how harmful are they to our pets? And if in fact you think it's your dog perhaps did ingest something at I don't know, Spain Park or wherever you're walking your pet, what's the best thing to do?
The first thing is to have them examined, because A veterinarian may not be able to tell you exactly, or, you know, if the pet even ate anything.
Yeah.
But we are really skilled in being able to look at an animal and know if it's acting normally or not. I mean, that's the first thing they teach you in school is you've got to know what normal is, because if you don't know what normal is, you're never going to know what abnormal is. Mm-hmm. So the physical exam is important. You know, checking their heart rate, that may or may not be something that an owner feels comfortable, or, you know, feels like they have the knowledge to do. It's not hard, but, you know, if you have a dog that's not bouncing off the walls, and their heart rate's really high, you know, that would put up a red flag. You know, a dog with a high heart rate should either be really anxious, or it should be really energetic. And temperature, you know, as well. A dog that has a fever, if it has a fever and it's really active, or it just came in for a long walk or exercise, that can be normal. But, you know, a dog that is not real active and has a fever, then that can, you know, be a red flag. So the exam is really important. And drugs affect human drugs affect animals just like they affect people. Now, the way they affect them may not be the same. We've talked about before that a dog that eats marijuana, and usually it's eats, you know, they don't smoke it unless, yeah, I guess an owner blows it in their face.
Yeah.
But, you know, they usually ingest it, and it doesn't affect dogs the way that it affects people. It's almost like a stimulant in dogs. Whereas in people, I guess for the most part, you know, it's kind of it's a downer, it's a depressant.
Yeah.
So, you know, most drugs that will affect people will also affect pets, but it just may affect them in a different way. So I think just based on our demographic, we don't see a lot of, you know, illegal drugs that a dog has eaten, or a cat, or whatever.
Can dogs get secondary smoke? I'm assuming they can, correct?
If you're smoking dope. I would assume. I mean, I don't have any, experience with it, but I would assume. But you know what we do get a lot of is, you know, an owner calls in their own blood pressure medication, or they're on, you know, a medication for anxiety, or, you know, an antidepressant, or, right, you know, whatever it is, and they dropped it on the floor and their dog ate it.
Yeah.
So there are some things that we know. Oh, and another one that we always get is like pesticides.
Ooh.
You know, like, you know, I had a wasp spray in my garage, and we'll get a call. I had a wasp spray in my garage. Dog bit the top of it off and got sprayed in the mouth, or whatever, you know, stuff like that. And so, if we know that it's something that's going to be, you know, harmful, like, oh, you know, I take 30 milligrams of benazepril, you know, every, yeah, day, and my 5-pound dog got all of it, you know, mm-hmm, that might be a problem. But for things that we don't, because, you know, there's a lot of medications out there, and there's a lot of different chemicals out there, and we don't pretend to know everything about them all.
Yeah.
But usually what we'll do is if we're not sure how that medication or how that chemical is going to affect the dog, and anybody listening, I'll tell you, the best thing to do is to call ASPCA, poison hotline, and they're going to charge you. And I think it's about $75. But they'll put on a board certified toxicologist, a veterinary toxicologist, and they'll be able to tell you, as long as you give them the medication or the chemical and how much it possibly could have gotten into, they'll tell you, this is what it could potentially do to your dog, and this is what you need to do. And sometimes they'll say, hey, no big deal. If your dog throws up, has some diarrhea, then you need to see a vet. But otherwise, just watch and wait. And sometimes they'll say, get in right away, and the dog needs to have some vomiting induced, and maybe even given some activated charcoal to keep them from getting a toxic level of whatever medication or chemical they ingested.
That's crazy. Great stuff. Great information. And again, who do they need to call? Poison control, the
ASPCA.
Yes.
And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that know what that means. Mm-hmm. But it's basically, it's a pet foundation, and they have a poison helpline.
All right. Speaking of things to eat, let's get to our mutt mail here. info@tonycurryradio.net. info@tonycurryradio.net. We try to get to as many emails as possible. Some great email questions today. It's Dr. Rab Stewart, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Dark Side of the Pooch. You can hear it every Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Central Time, and wherever you get your podcast. Barry in Rainbow City said, and this is very, very interesting because my dogs love these. Do you know what dogs love to eat in the fall time outside?
Acorns.
Yes, they love to eat acorns, and I mean, they'll eat them up like candy. Is it okay for my dogs to be eating acorns? And he also wants to know why dogs love to eat goose poop.
Dogs love to eat anything gross.
Yeah, they do.
So anything, like, dogs love to eat poop. So I think that's just a dog thing. You know, acorns, acorns by themselves are not that big a deal.
Yeah.
But they can cause, if you get enough of them, they'll make their stomach, you know, hurt. They might get a little bit of gastritis. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a toxic issue. But the other thing that they'll do is nuts of any kind, especially hickory nuts.
Mm-hmm.
They will get trapped in their intestines if the dog is the right size. Okay. You know, then the size of the intestines are relative to the size of the dog. So a small dog is going to have what we call a lumen, which is just the hole of the intestine. A small dog is going to have small lumen in its intestine, and a large dog is going to have a large lumen. So a large dog could eat, you know, some hickory nuts or some other acorn or, you know, whatever, and maybe be fine, unless they were to eat a bunch of them. And a small dog, if it ate the same thing, it might get obstructed. So the biggest risk is a mechanical obstruction to the GI tract, which would have to be surgically removed. I've removed some walnuts from I think one dog, one nut once.
Yeah. So it's kind of like human beings, right? We eat a lot of nuts. We get binded up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I got a fresh new honey roasted peanuts and I eat the whole jar and I can't poop for 4 days.
Some people, it gives them like diverticulitis or something.
Yeah. Terry in Birmingham wants to know, what is Dr. Rab's favorite Halloween candy and what does he give out at his house?
My favorite Halloween candy is the mini Almond Joys. I think I love those. Oh, I thought I was going to be
it's my
minority.
Favorite. I love the crunch, man. It can't be the regulars. It's got to have the nut in it, man. I love those.
Yeah. I mean, Mounds is okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, why would you not want to put an almond in there?
Oh my gosh. Oh, I love that.
And my kids hate them and my wife hates them. Come home and they, you know, from trick or treat and they got those Almond Joys and I pluck them right out of there.
Oh, the dark chocolate ones are even better. I mean, that's my favorite by far. I'll go Reese's. Everyone loves Reese's. I'll go second, but the Almond Joys, I'm with you, brother. Roger in Knoxville wants to know, this is a great question. I had a baby deer in my backyard yesterday afternoon. And it was on one side of the fence. Its mother was on the other side. It was making this gosh awful cry. It could not jump the fence to get to its mother. And of course, I'm telling the dumb deer to jump to the side. Well, Rainer goes out and he just hightails it and chases the mother off. And it's just amazing because dogs, they don't care what they're jumping into. And he wants to know, Roger wants to know, why don't more dogs break legs? I mean, when they're going after something, I mean, he could land on a stump. He could land on a stick. How strong are dogs' legs? Why don't more dogs break legs when they just run like reckless abandonedly?
Well, sometimes they do. First of all, it doesn't happen a lot. So I don't know the answer to that question except for they just know how to control their bodies and they know how not to fall. We did have so a couple of just weird broken leg stories. There was a dog that we still see, and when it was a puppy, there was somebody at the house that had a PVC pipe. They were doing some construction, and they basically just turned with that pipe. You know, I mean, they had it in their arm, and they turned and just kind of, you know, the pipe turned with them,
yeah,
and it hit the dog in the leg and broke the dog's leg. Oh. And you would never think, like, how is that possible? But you just, you know, you hit it just wrong. And that's what causes it. And then we had another one that came to our daycare and it was a bigger dog. And so I think the weight probably had a little bit to do with it. And it was jumping. You know how dogs do? They'll kind of rear up almost like a horse on their back leg sometime, and they'll put their legs up in the air.
Yeah.
And all this dog did was just come down on its front legs, and it broke its wrist. That was a terrible break, like in the worst possible spot. So they do have those freak accidents where they will break a limb. But I think that the reason that you don't see it as often as you would think is because dogs, they're just really good at controlling their body. They're very agile, you know, for the most part.
That's pretty amazing. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net here, Dark Side of the Pooch and some mutt mail. Tanya in Louisville, Kentucky, Here's that, you know, we always talk about dog years. 1 year counts as 7 years for dogs. But she wanted to break it down year by year. Obviously, when your dog's two, is it really 14? When it's three, is it really 21? So I did a little research, I hope you don't mind, through a well-known veterinarian site. And I want you to tell me if these numbers are pretty much on. They're saying after 1 year, your dog's really 12. After 2 years, he's 18. After 3 years, he's 24. So he's actually growing 8 years every year. 430, 535, 638, 744. And then it slows down big time. At the age of eight, your dog is only 48. At the age of nine, he's 51. At the age of 10, which I think is kind of old for a dog, he's only 55. 11, he's 58, 12, 62, 13, 65, and it goes up to 15. They're saying a 15-year-old dog is roughly 73 years of age in human years. Does that sound about right?
It does. Age is kind of like, it's not exactly like a bell curve in animals, but it is a little bit like that. So that they, you know, they're, like you said, early on, they age really rapidly. And then as they get older, it slows down a little bit. So it's not a perfect bell curve. You know, it'd be, I guess, more of like a, you know, slowly like a tapering bell curve where it starts off really fast and then it just kind of slowly goes down over time. So yeah, that's correct. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you would come up with those exact numbers.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, as the dog gets older, its relative human age doesn't go as fast. That's correct.
I wish it was like that for humans. Wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Of course we'd have a lot.
I don't know though, like as time slows down and your body starts to fail, you know, maybe I'd want the opposite of that where, you know, it's really slow at the beginning and then you hit like when your body starts falling apart, you're like, all right, just take me. Let's go.
Maybe for men more than women, maybe. Because I don't know too many guys that would want to be 4 years old and actually be 30. But yeah, because we don't ever mature, period. I mean, we're in our 50s and we're still acting like goofballs. So maybe for women, that would be a little bit better. At Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. On Facebook, their number is 205-208-0301, 208-0301. Go to the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. They're fantastic. I take all my pets there. As a matter of fact, I need to bring Frisco in next week and get him a look-see. He's due for a bunch of different things. He's Dr. Rab Stewart here, and this is Dark Side of the Pooch, 7 o'clock Central every Monday through Friday. We have a question here from Dorothy in Gatlinburg. And by the time this show airs, it will have been the first freeze up in Gatlinburg. I don't know if we're going to get that down here in the South yet, but she wants to know, how long can cats and dogs be outside in sub-freezing temperatures?
Well, it depends a little bit on their coat. So, you know, a dog that has a lot of hair is going to be able to stay out longer. You know, dogs and cats that have a lot of hair, they're going to be able to stay out longer. And dogs that don't have a lot of hair, or small dogs, you know, small dogs don't regulate, they can't regulate that temperature, as well, as big dogs. But I would say that if you have the ways and means, you know, if the temperature gets, you know, probably much lower than 40 to bring them inside just for their comfort. But I think that if you have a large dog that has a thick coat, that dog's going to be much more hardy, you know, when it comes to severe cold temperatures.
Yeah, dogs are interesting because, you know, dogs, we don't know, well, we do know when dogs get too hot. Obviously, we don't want to put dogs in cars, anything over 75 degrees, you don't want to leave your dog in the car. And there's really nothing they can do because they can't sweat, right? But do dogs know when they're too cold? I mean, obviously, if a dog's outside your back door shaking, he's too cold. But I mean, if they're out in the snow playing with the rest of the family, will they know when to come in?
Yeah, they'll know. And just because of where we live, I think that people know now about heat stroke more. I think people are more aware of it now. So we're not even really seeing a lot of heat stroke dogs anymore. But we certainly see more overheated dogs than we don't really see any overheated cats, but yeah, we certainly see more of that than we do hypothermic. I've never seen someone come in with a pet that was too cold from the weather. Now, one way that you can tell if a pet is just really bad off and probably close to dying, their temperature will drop. So a lot of times we'll see these old cats that are just not doing well. You know, they're 18, 19 years old, and they'll come in and their temperature is like 96, 97. And that's just a real, you know, poor prognostic indicator or poor sign. So we will see pets that have a low temp, but it's not because of the weather. It's just because they're not really active, you know, yeah. They're not moving around. And so their temperature gets low. And that's a real poor sign.
All right. Here's a question for you since you just brought it up. Have you ever seen someone give their cat a ride? I've never seen it. I've never seen a cat in a car ever. I mean, I've seen people when they're taking their cat to the vet. Yeah. But they'll put it in a kennel. But have you ever seen, I see it every day. I see dogs, but I've never seen someone holding a cat in their lap at a traffic light. Have you?
No, never.
I wonder why that
they're
is.
Always in carriers, you know, I mean, I guess I think that cats take a ride in a car for two reasons. Number one, to go to the vet, or number two, for like a move, you know, they're moving.
Yeah.
Owner's moving, so
cats don't like cars, do they?
I don't think it's a very pleasant experience for cats.
All right, final thing I want to get into, because this is going to be falling right before Halloween, and we talked about is it okay to put animals in Halloween costumes? And he's like, yeah, sometimes they love the fact. If you listen to the show last week, you can book a podcast at Tony Curry Radio Podcast. You said, you know, animals that love attention, they're obviously getting a lot more attention. People are touching them more, and they're like giving them attention, period, because they're cute, right? Are there some Halloween costumes that could be deemed, say, dangerous to your pet?
If there's things that they can eat off of them, like, okay, you know, little accessories or whatever. We always worry about dogs that are eating things that they shouldn't, and then they get stuck. Like we mentioned with the hickory nuts. But I mean, other than that, like you want to be sure that they're comfortable and it's not too tight. Also, it's not too loose, so they're going to trip and fall. But I mean, other than that, everything's pretty safe.
All right. There he is. Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, brought to you every single week by, of course, the fine folks here at Ed's Pet World down there in Homewood. They've been open for nearly 50 years. Seth's got himself a great toy business. It's about 50-50 right now. Go down there, take your unopened toys. If you find them in the attic, whatever, he buys, sells, and trades. He's got everything for watches, Star Wars stuff. It's fantastic. And, of course, their pets. They got everything from ferrets, chinchillas. They got a cockatoo down there named Buddy, which is fantastic. All kinds of fish. They have water turtles. They have all kinds of rabbits. They've got every type of pet you're looking for when it comes to exotic pets. They'll help you keep that pet safe, and they're there for you anytime you need them at Ed's Pet World. Check out Ed's Pet World down there in the beautiful Homewood. Hey, listen, have yourself a wonderful week. Another fantastic show. Thank you, my brother.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you next time.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.